I am Gary Parrish. Welcome back, CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, honor Brandon Davies. Smash the like button. If you haven't yet subscribed to the Ion College Basketball Podcast, please also do that wherever you subscribe to podcasts like Spotify and Apple. Let's get into it. We are both getting ready, Matt Norlander and I, to head to Las Vegas for the Nike EYBL circuit and NBA Summer League. It's going to be a big week. It's the EYBL's return to Vegas. First time since 2019, I believe. Norlander, I think you've been to Vegas more recently than that. Yeah. I know I have. You're looking forward to going back? This should be fun, shouldn't it?
It should be, yeah. I'm looking forward to going back. We now do not have to deal, and GP and I will find time one way or another to podcast from Vegas and give a little recap of the scenes going down there out in the desert. I was curious as to how our workflow was going to be affected by the potential, how dumb of all of us to think that maybe it would have been possible, of a USA pasting at the hands of Spain because they were never going to beat Spain. We don't have to worry about that because Team USA got absolutely rocked.
Stink. Jesus Lord.
As I sent it out on Twitter on Monday night, that was a mid-major gets to the Sweet 16 and then the real world comes crashing down upon you kind of wake-up call. I know there was some hope. I know everyone wants to blame the president. Folks, it doesn't matter what had happened. That Belgium is so much better than us. It was clear. It was beyond clear. And the fact that they were bringing on guys like Doku and Lukaku in the second half, who are just way, way better than anyone we have on our roster, showed everything. So we don't have to make this a full-blown Team USA World Cup recap pod. Although I've got some correspondence to get to in a second here. The shouts to CBS at gmail.com continues to get soccer-related emails. These people, I don't know how the wires have been crossed, but I can't help but chuckle. But yeah, no, listen, I was hoping that we'd be able to keep it competitive. A 2-1 loss would have been acceptable. That was a 4-1 blowout. I felt like Belgium could have won that thing 6-1 if they really, really wanted to.
That was a disgrace. That was a disgrace. I felt disgraced as an American. It made me want to reattach to my Mexican heritage. I know Mexico lost.
Yeah, they did.
But at least they showed heart. At Azteca, they showed heart. We were on home soil.
I know.
They showed heart on home soil. We had no heart on home soil. That looked like what Hubert Davis did to St. Peter's.
Yeah, not good. Not ideal. Well, you know, it's been a really, really fun World Cup. I'm scheduled to be there for France, Morocco Thursday.
Well, I hope both teams show up for your sake.
So France is.
I hope both teams show up.
I know. I hope so as well.
And what's going on with our goalie?
Dude.
Bro, what are you doing?
That's freeze froze is what
I don't mean to step on. I don't mean to try to sit here and pretend I'm a soccer analyst, but our goalie is stupid.
Okay.
That was the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
What do you want from me? We're going to be in Vegas. We'll recap there. We don't have to worry about watching Team USA play Spain because that game isn't going to happen. Spain will play.
We would have lost by 50 if we played them.
It would have been.
That little 18-year-old would have scored 70 goals on us.
I mean, Jamal. Yes, one of the best players in the world. We have a mailbag
episode. We had him. I wish his parents would have had premarital sex in the United States. We could have fixed this whole thing if we'd have just flew his. We didn't think this through. We should fly his parents in.
The location of the premarital sex doesn't matter. It's the birth.
Okay, fine. They can do it anywhere, yeah, but then we got to get them here, just like we did Bolligan. That's how we got our best player.
That's right.
We just made his. We just trapped his mom here. He said, "Deliver here."
Birthright citizenship. Yep.
And aren't
that's how we won the group stage?
Aren't we trying to take that away now?
Anyway, can keep it going here because we don't have a long show. Doing?
The only reason we can even beat Bosnia is because of birthright citizenship.
Speaking of that, here's an email we got. In the name of many Bosnian Americans, thanks to Morning Footy and Galazzo Network for the beautiful opening of today's show. This came to the podcast email. Thanks for showing all the reactions of great success of Bosnia and Herzegovina's national soccer team. Let me borrow FC Barcelona's motto, more than a club. To play in the World Cup in 2026 for Bosnia and Herzegovina is way more than a sports achievement. Sead from Clinton Township, Michigan, sent that to our email address. He probably doesn't even listen to the show. wonderful. Since the last time we did the mailbag episode, that was just in the wake of the tournament expanding. We got we're not going through the tournament expansion emails on this. We got a couple of World Cup style. I appreciate there's a lot of creativity. It's just too much, and the tournament's going to 76 teams. So I appreciate the inspired emails about how you can still fix the tournament, even if it's going to be 76 teams. We don't have time to...
I know how to fix the tournament. Get Belgium out of there. That's one place to start. Get them out of there. Change goalies. That would go a long ways in making this better.
We got a handful of emails asking Parrish to stop driving hands-free. They're worried you're going to die.
I mean, I am going to die. We're all going to die, but my windshield has needed to get repaired for like a week now. Don't ask me why it takes a week, 2 weeks to get a windshield repaired. Don't ask, because I don't know. And the people at the windshield repair shop, they don't seem to know either. But I've been having to drive my wife's car, and that means like actually drive. Like I had to put my foot on a pedal and turn the wheel and stuff. Miserable. And then I had to watch that disgusting soccer match on the pitch last night. Also miserable. The Kamboozer also lost to Darren Peterson. My life's terrible.
Robert Hack with 2 A's sent an email. He said, as someone whose last name is a double A, I will miss the Mac. Thanks, Robert Hack. Mac forever.
Hey, change your name to the Metro.
Robert Metro.
Robert there Metro. You are.
We talked on one of our previous episodes about how Duke and Michigan were slated to play that game at the Marlins Stadium. Now that Dusty May is going to the Mavericks, I'm pretty sure that game is getting moved. It's just the process of moving it. They might wind up playing in the Heat's building as playing a basketball game in a basketball arena. Who knew? Hasn't been officially decided, but it feels like it's trending that way. We were talking on the 1991 Final Four. Josh has the photo. We guessed how much money it would have cost face value for a ticket to sit way, way high up. Someone was at that game. I asked to send it in. Adam Morrissey sent it in. Not Morrison, Adam Morrissey. $20 for upper level in 1991. One of us guessed $25. I think I guessed $25.
What if it was actually Morrissey? What if it was actually Morrissey sitting way up there?
Morrissey?
Yes. Wouldn't that be funnier?
It'd be the idea of Morrissey attending the 1991 Final Four in Minneapolis is incredible. We have a mailbag show that's gonna have a fun back half to it. So we need to get going.
Let's get going.
We are not loaded up with a ton of questions, but we have enough. GP, you go first.
We don't have extra time. This isn't the world. This is not the World Cup. We can't just add 8 minutes.
There's no stoppage time on this podcast. No stoppage. As much as I'd like that to be, that is not the case.
All right, let's start with our first question in this mailbag. It comes from Connor. He's from Connecticut. Here's what he asked. With the NCAA's new 5 years to play five seasons, what will we now refer to players in their fifth year as graduates, super seniors? Thank you for the breadth of fresh college basketball air through the spring and summer. Oh, that's very nice. Thank you, Connor from Connecticut. Super seniors sounds right to me. Does that sound right to you?
I think that's the term here. I mean, consider that with 5-5 expected to be in place. Now it is being challenged. There's a lawsuit in Ohio. There was one that was filed this week in Tennessee that I think AJ Store is also a part of. Who knows what's going to happen with those lawsuits. Most of these lawsuits are filled with college basketball players you've never heard of that are understandably pissed because they're losing out on a potential fifth year and, you know, NIL earnings that is just not there because the NCAA is saying, no, there's no grandfathering in. So we've got these lawsuits. We'll deal with that as they continue to roll out over the coming months here. But if this goes as expected, there's no such thing as a redshirt freshman anymore. You will be, you know, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. There's no taking years off. I mean, you could not play because of injury or whatever, but we need a designation. I mean, if you've technically played at one school and then are going to be a graduate student at another school, you could be a grad senior, but super senior sounds like the likely term and the easy term to me. So that's my thought on it. We actually, I included this one at the top here. We had two questions about this. So I figured, okay, two people had the same thought. We'll toss it in there. Super senior seems to make a lot of sense. And I like the 5-5 generally speaking. It's not going to be perfect, but I do like eliminating the waiver process. If you can get that on the books and we can make that official protocol here in the next year or so.
I'm with you. I like the 5-5 as long as it holds up legally. And I've read some stuff from smarter people than I that suggest that it has a good chance to. It's just cleaner. Like, we don't have to worry about a committee reviewing medical records or whatever. It's just cleaner. Yeah, I'm I'm not a big fan of everything we do in college athletics. I think this is a step in the right direction. Let's move forward.
Maxwell from Parts Unknown asks, do you think excessive NIL spending will create new blue bloods in college basketball? Also, which factor matters more, coaching stability or a stronger basketball spending ratio relative to football at that same exact school? You go first, GP. What are your thoughts on if we're actually going to look up and say 5 years and see a new school or two that's consistently in that top 10 as a pure result of its ability to spend in college basketball?
Yeah, I can see that. As long as we don't try to put restrictions on what type of money people can throw around. And I know there are restrictions now technically, but nobody cares. Nobody's paying attention to it. But yeah, money can solve anything. Like you could put me in charge of the Cincinnati Reds. And if you told me I had $350 million, eventually I would get it right. I know the Mets run counter to this idea, eventually I think you would get it right. So, I made this point even before we got to this level of NIL. If for whatever reason you were a billionaire and you were a Southern Miss grad and you wanted Southern Miss to have the best women's soccer program in the country, if you just threw money at it, you'd have a good chance of creating something close to that. I think that's what they've done at Texas Tech in a variety of sports. Softball, they just threw money at it, and next thing you know, they're in the Women's College World Series. So yeah, I think it's pretty clear. If the most important thing is money. You can't throw money at a bad coach. Like you need to have a quality coach, obviously. But money's going to be the most important thing moving forward until something changes.
Schools not labeled as blue bloods now that I think could move into this category, just in terms of, you know, purely from a money standpoint. Michigan. Yeah. And these are schools that have done well and spent a lot in recent years. Michigan, Illinois, St. John's, Arkansas, BYU, Texas. Yeah. If you want to get really picky and finicky, Louisville is kind of right on the line of, is it a blue blood or not? A lot of people say it absolutely isn't. If you want to say it's not, well, it's clearly spending enough and it could potentially get there. We'll see if Kelsey can get that done. So to the first part of the question, yes, I can see it. But to the nature of that first question, that means you are spending a ton almost every year. And as a result, you are regularly in the top 10 and making Final Fours here and there. So I could see it. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But what matters more, the coaching stability or how much you spend relative to how much you can spend versus what your football program spends? I would take the coaching stability over how much you can spend at a given university relative to your football program. I think that really good coaching and really good evaluations can overcome a budget to a certain extent. I think that's there. It's harder to overcome, not every program, we've quite literally seen this over the past 3 or 4 years, can overspend incompetency. So right. Some goes one way, some goes the other. Like you can have a little bit of both here, but if you had me pick between the two, I would rather have coaching stability over having, you know, one of the 10 biggest budgets in the sport there. Cause I do think the actual IQ and how you apply it matters, you know, a significant part.
I agree with that. I you got to have the right coach. That should go without saying, but give me the top 10 budget and I'll find the right coach. If I've got it wrong, I'll get it right. I'll just keep moving guys out of here until I get it right. But without the top 10 budget, everything's difficult. I can find the right coach with the top 10 budget. But without it, I don't know that I can find the right players or the right coach. And it just sort of reminds me of being at Big 12 spring meetings. Like I'm around all these guys. And even within that power conference, like there's levels to it. And you could just see some guys just looking at the other guys. And it's like, I can't even compete with you anymore. Like I have no chance. I can't go to an auxiliary gym and find a unheard of thing and develop and beat guy. Because that's hard to do. But beyond that, if I find them, you'll buy them from me after 1 year. Like it there really does, even within power conferences, seem to be a haves and have nots. And I would much rather be a fan of a school that's a have, because I'll find the coach. But if you don't have the money, it gets hard. And if you don't have the money, you ready for this? Even if you have the coach, you can't keep him. So there's you lose the coaching stability if you don't have the money.
Typically speaking, yes, that is absolutely the case.
All right. Let's go to Matt from Minnesota.
This is a fun one. All right.
Yeah, I like this one. He ranked the national title winners. I'll just read what he wrote. He said he's come up with his own tiers for college basketball's champions since 2006. Would love to get your thoughts and rankings. So as you point out, Norlander, when you sent this to me, he did sent this before the national championship game. So this does not include Michigan. We'll just go through his tiers. Then we'll add the 2026 national champions. Try to figure out where we think.
Let's debate the tiers that he's got, if we agree or we don't.
Okay, so tier one, this is what he considers the elite tier. Consistent contender throughout the season, dominant tournament run, undisputed best team of their season. He's got 2009 North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I think that's clear. They like blew out in the national championship.
34-4, number one at KenPom. Won their tournament games by 20.2 points. Yeah. That's the third best margin of victory over the past 20 years. Definitely an elite team.
2012 Kentucky, no argument. 2018 Villanova, undeniably. 2024 UConn, can't argue.
The number one margin of victory of any tournament team ever in the 64-plus team era. 23.3 points per game they won by. 37-3 record. Number one overall at KenPom, UConn without a doubt. But those are the four that he stopped at. He has those four as elite. Again, this was sent before Michigan. Let's just invoke Michigan right now. Michigan needs to be on this list, GP.
I agree. Yes.
37-3. Number one at KenPom. Won its tournament games by 19.0 points. That's fifth best in the last 20 years. Also, KenPom net rating of 39.70. Now, every year is a universe unto itself, so you can't really compare Kentucky in 2012 was 32.59. Michigan this year was 39.70. Things have changed, but relative to what they were to the rest of the competition, 2025, 2026, Michigan has to be considered an elite team. The question becomes, if you're going to be elite, by definition, we can't put 10 out of the past 20 champions on the elite tier. Does it stop at five or can we squeeze one more? Let's see what else we got here. But Michigan has to be with that group of UNC 09, Kentucky 2012, Nova 2018, and UConn 2024. Bang on. Those all have to be considered elite teams.
I would go ahead and tell you, I would add one more to the elite. I'll give you his tier two. These are great teams. He describes them as dominant regular season or tournament runs. They had a poor stretch during the season, not clearly the best team.
Okay.
That list involves 2007 Florida. So that's the second Florida national championship team under Billy Donovan. 2008 Kansas, 2013 Louisville, 2015 Duke, 2019 Virginia, 2021 Baylor, 2025 Florida. Yep.
Let me guess.
Okay.
I'm going to say, first of all, this is a hell of a group of teams. This is where great email, great idea here. I think you're going to say 2008 Kansas.
I think that's elite.
Yeah, 37-3, number one at KenPom, 35.21 net rating, almost 4 points that season in net rating at KenPom ahead of number two Memphis. We agree. I would bump 07-08 Kansas to elite, and I think that's it. Baylor is a tricky one. It defeated undefeated Gonzaga in the title game and that's won handily, but did not finish number one at KenPom, went 28-2. It would be the other one that I would consider. Maybe it's hindered by the fact that it didn't play a full-on season. That was obviously a COVID-affected year. They only played 30 total games. Can't necessarily hold it against them because it was forces outside of their control. Louisville fans listening probably want to build a case there. Team did lose five games. Finished number one at KenPom. Top two in both offensive and defensive efficiency. I get all that. But yeah, we agree. If we could only move up one more, it would be Kansas. That Florida team was good. I can't consider it elite because remember, it had that bumpiness near the end of the season. Also didn't even finish. The 06-07 team, I think, is remembered as a better team than 05-06. 05-06 Florida finished number one at KenPom that season. That Florida team that year, 06-07, it actually finished number two, play at home trivia time. North Carolina was number one at KenPom the year that Florida won its second straight national title.
That second Florida national championship team, I was around them all the time. Den Gainsville, you know what they were? Bored. They were bored until they got to the tournament. They were just bored. And then they did what we all expected them to do. But just some more stuff on 2008 Kansas. Like you said, 37-3. They did go 3-4 in a seven-game stretch from late January to early February. And I guess that would be Matt's explanation for, hey, they weren't just consistently dominant all year. They did have a 7-game stretch when they went 3-4, but they won the Big 12. I think shared it with Texas maybe, but still won the Big 12, won the Big 12 tournament, closed the season on a 13-game winning streak, and obviously won the first ever Final Four with three other number one seeds in it. Eight dudes, I looked this up last night, played in the national championship game for Kansas against Memphis. Seven of them played in the NBA. Trivia time.
Oh, boy.
Who didn't? One player played in the national championship game 2008 and did not appear in the NBA. Who was it? You'll know it as soon as I say it.
I'll know it as soon as you say it. That Kansas team had.
Don't worry. It wasn't Sasha Kahn. Sasha Kahn played.
Chalmers. Was Darnell Jackson on that team?
Yes, he appeared in the NBA.
He did play in the NBA. Sharon Collins was on that team.
Played like 20 games in the NBA.
Did he really? Darrell Arthur was on that team. I don't know. Who is it?
Russell Robinson.
Russell Robinson.
The 2008 title game, of course, it gave us Chalmers for the tie and Dozier for the championship. Russell Robinson's the only man to put on a Kansas uniform and didn't appear in a regular season NBA game.
Before we get to the very good tier, he's got 2018-19 Virginia as great. I think that's fair. 35-3, number one at KenPom. However, of the 20 national champions that we're talking about here, Virginia had the lowest average margin of victory in the tournament, won by a collective. Here's just so you understand the difference. UConn in 23-24, combined margin of victory, 140 points. That Virginia team, 45, 95 fewer points over six games there. So if we wanted to get really picky, could you say that Virginia team was very good versus great? It's up for debate. Let's continue on. Who's he got in the very good tier?
Very good tier. So this is a worthy champion, but wouldn't be considered dominant. Maybe last team standing in a wide open season. So in that one, he's got 2006 Florida, which I think by the end of it, they were clearly the best, but you didn't know that until the end of it. They didn't perform that way.
Lost six games. I think that's fair. Like losses have to count here. They lost six games that season.
By the end of it, I don't think anybody was beating Florida.
Yeah.
But during that season, you didn't know that. 2010 Duke makes sense. 2016 Villanova, 17 Carolina, 22 Kansas, 23 UConn. I think that list makes sense to me.
Okay. So I think 15-16 Villanova has to be in the great tier. It's got to be one tier up. And if I'm going to do that, I got to bump a team down. I would bump Virginia down, and I loved that Virginia team, but I would bump that. That Villanova team, 35-5, number one at KenPom. It went on an incredible tournament run. I just mentioned this before. It's the second, that 15-16 Nova team, not the 17-18, which was the better team, the 15-16 Nova team in the tournament, second greatest margin of victory over six games in the past 20 years and one of the best ever. So I would move them into the great tier. That 2010 Duke team, 35-5, I would put them in the very good. I'm not moving them, but for those that, if you're under the age of, if you listen to the pod and you're KenPom savvy, sort the data on Torvik and all that stuff. But let's say you're under the age of 27, 26, 28 years old. That Duke team was what made KenPom, I don't want to say hit the mainstream, because I'll say maybe the KenPom stuff being regularly referenced in writing and on broadcast. That was probably a couple years later. But earlier in that season, like we're talking mid-January, maybe late January, Duke was number one at KenPom and no one believed it. Like there was a lot of slander, including by the other guy on the screen there. Okay. Maybe that guy over there might have been trying to downplay Duke. And they wound up winning the national championship. So I remember when they won it, KenPom is just as a thing in college basketball, as an evaluation tool, as an analytic. It really earned a lot of validation because for a decent portion of that season, that Duke team was not considered to be the best team. It was considered to be overrated in the eyes of many. That Kansas team was good. Syracuse was good that year. Kentucky was really, really good that year. Ohio State was solid. Ohio State, I think that was Evan Turner's National Player of the Year campaign as well. So just an interesting note on Duke after the fact, but I would have them in the very good tier.
All right. And then he's got the lucky tier. The two lucky champions is 2011 UConn, 2014 UConn. Question for you.
Yeah.
Can you be a blue blood if you have two lucky championships?
Yeah, you can. Now, 2014 UConn is clearly lucky. 32-8, 7 seed, 15th overall at the end of the season at KenPom. Its efficiency margin wasn't good whatsoever. 2010-2011 UConn is not, I can't put them lucky. Now, they're lucky here because they actually have the most losses of any champion in the past 20 years. They went 32-9. 2014 UConn went 32-8. But they won every single time they played in a bracket event. They won in Maui, they won the Big East, and they won the NCAA tournament. They had Kemba. I think they got to be in the very good. But that's just me. I think UConn in 2014 is the only lucky team of the past 20 years. Agree or disagree?
I guess I would agree with that because at some point, I don't care what your record is. By the time we got to March, you had Kemba. And there's no luck about that. You just had the best. You had the best guy.
Yeah. Right. Great. Yeah. Well, Matt in Minnesota, that's a really creative email. We enjoy it. So we ultimately land on UNC in 09, Kentucky in 12, Villanova in 2018, UConn 24, Michigan 26, and Kansas 08 as the six elite teams of the past 20 national champions. We got a few more questions to get to, and then a walk down memory lane with Parrish. But first, Josh, can we get a word from our partners?
You ever get jealous you're not in that CBS Sports HQ commercial?
No. Never think about it, but sounds good. All right. Tim from Massachusetts wants to know, it's pretty clear neither of you are religious. There are several high-profile figures in college basketball who are open about their faith. Dan Hurley, Scott Drew, Bruce Pearl, Tony Bennett, John Calipari, Mark Pope, Rick Pitino, and Jerome Tang all come to mind. I'm wondering if you two have ever gotten pushback from any of those openly religious men in college basketball about your More of Us takes.
Not really. Do you recall one? Not really.
Not a single one. And honestly, like, with Tang and Drew specifically, like they actually poke fun at it. Like it's never been a thing. Tony Bennett has no idea what's talked about on this podcast. I can
Tony Bennett doesn't even know that this exists. Tony Bennett has no way. I could disparage Tony Bennett right now. He would not ever know. He would never know about that.
No chance whatsoever.
In fact, let's take a moment. Let's both disparage Tony Bennett. You go first.
Well, no, that's not, I already might have done that by knocking his UVA team down a notch. Coaches who I think have listened to the show: Hurley, yes. Pearl has told me. Pope has told me. There's no way Rick Pitino's listening.
Pearl, but Bruce is very religious, but also, let's be honest, one of us.
Bruce is a lot of things, okay? Yes. But it's a good question. Has it come up? Like not in the way that this email is framed. There are definitely coaches, head coaches, and random assistants who have, you know, just in regular conversation have identified it as an us to me before. That is unquestionably happened. It should be no surprise that's the case, but it is an interesting question. So
I've had college players walk up to me during shoot around and say, "Hey, Mr. Parrish." I'm like, "Yeah, what's up?" More of us than there are. it makes me laugh every time. I had somebody, we went to the Padres Dodgers game. Special shouts to Vin. I'm just standing in the Petco Park, and Vin comes up with the Ion College Basketball Podcast. My kids thought that was really impressive.
Brought it up on his phone.
No, he just came. He just wanted to say what's up, fist bump, tell me he's one of us.
There we go. Of course.
I think I gave him a hug. I was just really excited to see somebody.
That's totally acceptable.
My wife said it looked like I startled him a little bit. I was too excited. Okay. I was too excited to see Vin. Anyway. I did routinely once upon a time on radio in the Bible Belt refer to LeBron James as our King and Savior, and not everybody loved that.
Yeah,
I got a couple of emails about that, and then I was kind of like, "All right, I'll stop." But you also need to relax. I'll stop, but you also need to relax. No, here's the truth: I'm not religious. If you want me to cop to it, but I am respectful of religion. Like if you're a Christian and you go to church every Sunday, I'm like respectful of that. If you're a Muslim, I'm respectful of that. My compass, to the extent that I have one, isn't rooted in religion as much as it's just, I try to do right by folks. As best I can. I just try to do right by folks. Like at the end of it, I just would like to be able to say, I try to do right by folks as best I can. And I don't know if that's good enough for anything, but that's sort of where my mind sits on most days.
Me too. You're next up, Zane from Missouri.
Zane from Missouri asked the following question. With the tournament expansion to 76 teams, it got me curious if someday conference tournaments will be non-existent someday. College football is starting to have conversations about eliminating conference championship weekend to fit in a play to fit in playoff games and not drag out the season. Do you think college basketball will have the same conversation if the tournament continues to expand? Would love to hear your thoughts on it. Oh, Zane, then I got good news. You're about to hear our thoughts on it. Norlander, what's your thoughts on it?
I think there is validity to the idea of some conferences not holding a conference tournament to put their best teams into the field and give themselves the best chance to advance and make more money and all that. I don't think it is going to happen anytime soon, particularly now that we are going to 76. It's a good question. The college football's calendar issue is way different than college basketball's calendar issue. And it makes sense why college football, if slash when it expands to 24 teams, it will basically have no choice but to eliminate its conference title games because you're going to need that weekend to stage the additional round of the playoff. And when you do that, you will then theoretically make more money by doing that, although the SEC pushes back on that greatly considering how much money the SEC makes for its conference tournament championship game. That's a whole huge football issue. I don't think it will get there. I'll tell you this, if we had the occasional conference or two that just said, we're not going to hold a conference tournament and we're going to give our auto bid to our regular season champion and do whatever and then, you know, stage the conference tournament championship as not having means to being the auto bid. I actually think the first league to do that would be smart in that you'd give yourself statistically the best chance at winning and you'd earn a lot of publicity for it. But as it stands, these things are ways for these leagues to get a decently high profile moment on at the time of the year when the most people around the country are paying attention to college basketball and you want to have a little bit of, you know, public identity to your schools that are getting into the big dance. So I don't think it's coming soon, but if I was a commissioner of one of these leagues and I wanted to increase my chances at having a team advance, you better believe I would be strongly considering this, but will this happen the next 5 years? I don't think so.
Yeah. With you, like anybody speaking in absolutes about this stuff is kind of out over their skis a little bit. I could envision anything as much as the networks, as long as the networks, I should say, are willing to pay for these events. I think they'll exist. The one bid leagues, I think, are more important than the multi-bid leagues, because by the time we get to the semifinals of the Big Ten, like for the most part, in most years, everybody's in at that point. There's less drama attached to those. So as always, we'll see, but I think everything's up in the air right now. I'm not even sure I don't think anybody can honestly and accurately tell you exactly what the NCAA tournament's going to look like in 10 years. So how could you reasonably assume what conference tournaments are going to look like until you even know that?
Yeah, it makes me shudder. All right, Camden from Rhode Island emails. I was drinking a protein shake when Rich from Rhode Island called GP an egghead, and I laughed so hard it came out my nose. That's just an incredible way to start an email. Anyways, as we are now in the 76-team era, will the A-10 become a consistent three-bid league? Will it continue its 1-2-team trend? Or could it make waves and get 4, maybe even 5 from time to time? Okay, I'll answer this real quick. The A-10, I believe it will be a two-bid league minimum every year moving forward. That's not good enough. This is a 14-school conference. Three bids needs to be, not the hope, the expectation for the A-10. We have 76 teams that are going to be in this damn thing moving forward here. Maybe you can pop in the right year and get 4 into the field. There actually was a time not too long ago when the A-10 sent 6 to a 68-team tournament. Would love to see that. Between VCU, Dayton, SLU, St. Joe's, George Mason, Loyola, you have enough schools there alone, let alone the ones that'll pop up, your Davidsons, your URIs, your whatnots, in a given year, where 3 needs to be the expectation. They have a new commissioner, Dan Leibovitz, who has big-time ties to basketball, former assistant coach, was the number 2 at the Big East until recently. So, yes, from 97 until 2018, the A-10 averaged 3.2 NCAA tournament bids per season. It has dropped off a cliff in the past, 6-7 years. It needs to get back to that. I think 2 is going to be the baseline. I'll be shocked if it doesn't get at least 2 moving forward, because typically, that second team in years where it didn't get it, it was right on the outside looking in. But that's not good enough. Atlantic 10 basketball first conference needs to be getting 3 in on a yearly basis at minimum moving forward.
I'm with you. Like, this sort of like growing divide between the haves and have nots is not great for most non-Power 4 conferences, but I think you can argue it's a net positive for the A-10 for all the reasons you've laid out. I don't know exactly where all the money comes from, but if you can figure out it, like there are schools, athletic departments going into debt to just have good basketball teams right now. Mm-hmm. So like be one of them, I guess, if you have to be. But there's a real opportunity right now. There are A-10 schools. I did a column on this from Peach Jam last summer because I was hearing it from like ACC coaches. They were like, there are A-10 schools outspending me right now. And so like hammer that home. Go outspend not all, not even most, but some power conference schools. And as a league, that's how you elevate. That's how you get more bids. I think this is a real opportunity for that conference.
All right. You're next up.
Let's see. We are. Okay. Ryan in Hell's Kitchen. That's my stomping grounds. I walk through Hell's Kitchen. It's my stomping grounds.
Good area.
Great area. Just nothing but restaurants. Just everywhere. Yeah. Just one awesome restaurant after another. I love Hell's Kitchen. One of the things I've always appreciated about the pod is that you guys pretty thoughtfully and sensitively handle some of the social and ancillary issues about the sport beyond just what's happening on the court. I'm a lifelong gay college basketball fan, and I appreciate the way you two are not homophobic jerks. Thank you. It's been over 10 years since Derek Gordon became the first openly gay D1 basketball player and to play in the NCAA tournament for 3 schools. I have to assume in the past decade, there have been a number of players who were at least to some degree open to teammates and coaches. But as far as I can tell, none have come out publicly in a traditional way. Do you think that's a reflection of players these days just not prioritizing this sort of self-definition, or a reflection still of the risk of coming out? I've always assumed there could be some NIL and publicity opportunities for a decent but maybe not NBA-bound openly gay player that might not be available to him if he stayed in the closet. Interesting question, because first, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the note, Ryan.
I have not even thought about this, but when I read this last night, like it just defies logic and statistics and everything else to think that we really haven't had a gay player since Derek Gordon. I forgot about Derek Gordon.
Yeah. Hasn't, we definitely have,
of course, but I don't remember. Yeah. Like, I don't remember this being a thing.
Yeah, you know, right now in Division I, there are gay men's basketball players, without a doubt. When they choose to want to come out as their own decision, it would be a net positive for the world in general if that were the case, and this could be a thing where it wasn't a thing. But even as Charles Barkley talked about this on the air earlier this season, where he basically said, if you think there haven't been gay players in the NBA, you're kidding yourself, and the reason why it hasn't happened more is, you know, people need to wake up because, well, unfortunately, we still do live in a homophobic society. Which really is a terrible but accurate statement on where we are still. We're still just not where we need to be collectively in tolerance in this country. The NIL portion to this is actually pretty intriguing and probably pretty dead on. It's a lot more than just getting to a point where it's going to be, hey, I'm a gay basketball player. I'm going to come out, and because of that, I'm going to make an additional $200,000-$400,000 through marketing deals. But there probably is something to that. If someone could get to the point where they were comfortable enough. I'd like us to see some more advancement. It's not just men's college basketball. This is all of American sports still. We are quite clearly, although there have been some exceptions, we are quite clearly still not at the place. And maybe it's not even an American sports problem as much as a worldwide thing. So, you know, Derek Gordon was very brave to do what he did. I remember writing about him when he did it, and there really has not been one since him. And yeah, we're going on a decade, which is a damn shame. So hopefully soon enough we can continue to evolve this issue even more. But that's a really sharp and savvy question. I just don't know. I don't know when we evolve and progress to the next stage of this.
Yeah, like again, I had not even thought, this had not even entered my head in years, like thinking about this until I read this last night. And whether it was Derek Gordon or anybody else, my main takeaway from that time was we spent, particularly if you hosted sports talk radio shows, every once in a while you get into these conversations about, so what's it going to be like when? Because this is going to happen someday. But if you remember, for a while, we never had it. Openly gay, professional, male athlete in a major sports league. Yeah. And it was like, so we all just wondered, what's it going to be like? And then we got it, whether it was in the NFL, college basketball, the NBA. Yep.
and Jason Collins, Michael Sam. Like we did have a, we had a.
And you know what I remember? Like
it was out there, and then it just
stopped. But what I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I just remember it being a. Not a thing. It was like a big headline, and then it was just like cool. Everybody was cool. I was like sort of proud that like it, because that was the place everybody pointed to. What's it going to be like in the locker room? Like in the office? Like we you know, everything's cool in the office for the most part, I think. And what's it going to be like at the restaurant? Everybody's cool at the restaurant. But what's it going to be like in the locker room? And then it was just cool in the locker room. I remember being proud that everybody seemed to be cool. And then Ryan's right. It just sort of like these stories stop happening. And perhaps it's because people just don't feel compelled to like plant that flag and raise their hand as much as you might have if you were going to be the first or the second or whatever. I don't know the answer, but I recognize that what he noticed is accurate.
Yeah. All right. Really good email, and hopefully we'll have some real progress there sooner than later. All right. Last one. Matt in Connecticut, who sounds like an extremely attractive and intelligent guy with terrific hair, perhaps an enjoyable daily routine. He Matt in Connecticut, he writes, Parrish, believe it or not, July 5th marked your 20-year anniversary of being hired at CBS Sports. Congrats. What are some of the moments and memories that stand out most across the past two decades? The trips, the games, the controversies, the job frustrations, the travel trips from hell, stolen rental cars, latest nights out, etc. Folks, I wrote this email.
Yes.
I got an email from Paramount. Recognize Gary Parrish for their anniversary. Don't miss this chance to recognize Gary for their upcoming 20-year anniversary on July 5th, 2026. GP has been at CBS for two decades. GP, take us down memory lane. And Josh has a slideshow. I went through and got 40 different photos of you over the years. Oh, yeah. Get ready. So the floor is yours. I'll have some comments as well, but 20 years and keep going strong. What stands out over these past two decades of working at the Eye, buddy?
Well, first, I'm a little embarrassed because I did not know this until I got the email. Like, it did, I got the same email. It was like, congratulations. And I was like, oh, that's because if you would have asked me, I would have known, because I remember starting after July 4th, ABCD camp in Teaneck, New Jersey, my first ever assignment. Mark Swanson sent me to Swanee sent me to Teaneck, and he said, and I was real appreciative of this because, you know, you get a new job and you feel like you gotta, I'll get you 5,000 words by noon. Right. And it was like, hey, I want you to go there and I don't want you to write a word. I just want you to go meet people. Cause at that point, I think I was like a Conference USA beat writer. Like, you know, I knew John Calipari and Tom Crean and Rick Pitino, but that was about the Bobby Lutz, but that was the extent of it. Like, you know, I might've known Dave Leto a little bit or something, but it was like, so it was go there and meet people. And I'll never forget this. I don't know if it's a funny story, but it's a story. So I'm just like, I've got the little, I'm going to go check in at the ABCD camp.
Yep.
I'm Gary Parrish, CBS Sports, right? Look at that. So
hold on. Keep going. For everyone watching on YouTube, that photo you just saw with GP in the Widow's Peak, that's what's shown up on my phone when he calls me for the past 14 years.
So I pull into the parking lot at the ABCD camp, Sonny Vaccaro's famous camp, and pulled in right beside me is John Feinstein. We we park right next to each other.
Yep.
And I'm like, man, that's him. Like, I'm here. This is... Look at that crew. I
know. Keep going. Josh, you can cycle through this multiple times because I'm coming back to some of these photos. Don't worry.
That was something.
That's GP on the sideline of a football game in the rain. That's right.
So we parking out and I introduced myself.
Yep.
And I go, that's when I went to Maryland to see Mark Turchin and I decided to take in a Mets Nationals game. Okay. Dressed like that. True story.
So, getting some GP shots with hair, the famous There's Something About Gary.
Oh, it's a tough deal. I went through it. I've had a few different styles over the past 20 years. Look, that's me. And look at him.
Yeah, Rookie of the Year. I know. Kids just started watching Rookie of the Year. They love it. There we go.
So I go up and I get to introduce myself to John Feinstein. And I'm like, Mr. Feinstein, my name's Gary Parrish. I'm the new columnist at CBS Sports. And he was great. And we got up there. And they didn't have his credential. They had mine. I was like, I'm Gary Parrish, CBS Sports. And they had mine because I applied for it. And they didn't have his. And he was so offended by this. And it's like two 19-year-old women. And they're like, so who do you work for again? He's like, I'm John Feinstein, Washington Post. And they're like, who? How do you spell Washington? You know, it's like, whatever.
Incredible.
And then I swear to God, he looked at these young women and he said, have you ever heard of Season on the Brink? And they were like, you mean The Hills? I mean, it was like, what are you talking about? They had no idea what he was talking about. So anyway, I was like, I just grabbed my credential. I went inside. And then I swear to God, this is the true story.
Mm-hmm.
At some point over those next few days, what's up, Titus? At some point I go, I'm just introducing myself to people. And I see Tubby Smith, the head coach of the University of Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I said, Coach Smith. And he looked at me. I said, my name's Gary Parrish. I said, I'm the new college basketball columnist at CBSSports.com. I'm taking over for, no, I don't even think I said that. I said, I'm the new college basketball columnist at CBSSports.com. And he said, I hope you're nicer than the last guy.
The last guy was Doyle.
The last guy was Greg Doyle. So fast forward like 12 years, and I'm literally on radio every day saying, we got to fire.
Yeah.
So like, I've never forgotten that. The first words Tubby Smith ever said to me was like, I hope you're nicer than the last guy. And I just wasn't. I just wasn't. I look back on that with not great pride. But anyway, what needed else? To be done needed to be done.
What else stands out?
Well, I did one game in 20 years. I've done one sideline reporting game of football, and it was because I want to say it was Amanda, but maybe it was somebody else. There was a hurricane in Texas, and somebody couldn't get to Memphis for like opening week football. And they called me and they were like, you think you can do it? And I was like, I mean, what do I do? Just sit around and if somebody gets hurt, go try to figure out what's wrong with them? I guess I can do that. And it was raining the whole time.
Oh.
And it was like standing in a cold shower for 3 hours. And honestly, after a while, you just get used to it. You're just like standing in a cold shower for 3 hours. But that was fun. And honestly, just everything, man, like I have so many friends in this industry and they are either fired or let go or they're miserable or they hate their coworkers or they hate their bosses or just it's always something. And I won't say I don't have days. We all have days. But hand to heart, I feel like I'm the luckiest because I love my bosses. I love the people I work for. I love the people I work with. I enjoy my coworkers. I consider you guys my friends. I remember my father for every year of his life when somebody would say, how you doing? This was like a thing in my head for my whole life. They go, hey, Big Gary, how you doing? And he would say, man, there's only 32 more years till I retire.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see him the next year and it'd be like, there's only 31. And he just kept. And I just thought it was a cute little thing he said, which it was to him. But in my head, at some point I was like, he's counting down his life. Like he's not enjoying what he does as much as he's just counting it down. And I know he enjoys me and my brother and his grandkids and all that stuff, but he's like literally verbalizing a countdown till he can stop working. And I have never felt that way. I don't, you ready? I don't count down to when I retire. I hope that I never have to. I don't want to. Like I feel very fortunate. And so like, I don't even know how I got this job to begin with, but the idea that I'd still have it 20 years later in such a different role. You want to know something funny? My first ever job description at CBS was to write 3 columns during the week and 1 column in the off season per week. That was it. The whole job
has changed drastically.
I mean, the podcast didn't even exist. TV wasn't even on my radar. CBS Sports was a queue, obviously not a thing. All of this was none of what I do today on a daily basis has very little to do with what I did before I got to CBS and what I was hired to do. So I'm just like really appreciative. Like I look up at, as I'm like, I know we joke about my age all the time, but like I turn 50 next year. And I don't need anything more than what I got. Like this is an awesome life that I've figured out. And I forever appreciative of it. I don't know that I deserve it, but I'm glad I got it.
20 years. I'm 4.5 behind you. I came on in December of 2010. I remember first like learning who you were. I want to say like 08-ish. I have some sort of connection with like reading.com and you writing about like Memphis. Maybe it was like the Memphis, you probably were at the Memphis, Tennessee game that season. And I don't know, like at that point I was running College Hoops Journal. And then I had you on what was the first iteration of this podcast, the College Hoops. You have no memory of this, but the way my brain works, I literally remember where I was sitting in our old apartment when I recorded that podcast episode with you. The very first one. That's now lost to the ether. Man, I would love to go back and listen to that, but it is lost to the ether. I actually did, I can't remember why, but like about a month, maybe a month and a half ago, I was in the Wayback Machine. What was I looking for? I can't remember, but I stumbled upon like some of your radio hits from like 2012, like your old radio show, you doing stuff with Vernon. It was wild.
Oh no. I hope that stuff can never be found. Like
nothing like truly terrible, but it was
kind of terrible. Like there's stuff we could not do anymore.
Yeah, without a doubt. Your voice, what's interesting is your cadence is the same. Your voice sounds different. Obviously, that's no surprise. And digging up the photos that you just saw there, there's a good 8 to 10 that are not for public consumption and are on this bad boy right now. Absolutely not for public consumption. There are some good ones there. Josh, can you throw up that ping pong one? We've only got a few minutes before GP's got to bounce out of here. There's a ping pong photo. This is me, Parrish, Borzello, and Goodman. This is 2012. This is Fort Lauderdale. Yeah, this is the College Hoops Summit. This is just after probably talking shop for 7 hours, getting a break in that room exists. That's probably a control room now. That room has not had a ping pong table in it for I think a close to a decade there. GP and I will be in Vegas later this week. Throw up the pink photo. This is a top 20 photo on my phone. This has got to be Hakkasan 2016, I think. Oh, no. It's totally usable for that, but I just love this picture. You're taking a photo. That was the night Kim Kardashian was at Hakkasan. There was another photo that was in the carousel that Josh was showing where Parrish is walking out of Hakkasan and his jacket is on backwards. That was about as close as I could get to shareable on this podcast there, which is incredible. We've only got like 2 minutes more and then GP's got to bounce. Josh, you got to toss up the photo of Luka Garza from outside at the 21 tournament. This is one of the funniest photos. Parrish looks 3 feet tall. The Brendan Haywood one's bad as well. Look how small you look in this picture. Who's on the far left there? Who is that?
I can't. My screen is very small. Danny Granger, maybe? I was going to say Danny Granger.
I think it's Danny Granger, Luka Garza. And then look at Parrish. Look at him. Just throw up the Brendan Haywood one. Do this again. This is unbelievable.
The Brendan Haywood one's good.
So this is from 21. Look at this. This is 2016. Look at this. This is cruelty. I don't know who was. Is this an Amy Solomonson Proust show right here? This is cruelty, man, and so amazing.
Man, I need to do stand up. Man, there ain't nothing. All right, I said I don't need anything more, and that's mostly true. But if I could get one more thing out of my career, just one more thing, I need CBS Sports Network to hire Braden Smith. I just want to do stand-up for Braden Smith.
I know you got to go, but I got one more. Parrish hates this. Sorry. This is done purely out of love. All right. Josh, roll the video. Roll the video. Oh.
Hey, everybody. Gary Parrish, college basketball columnist, the CBS Sports Line. Coming to you today from Central Barbecue, one of Memphis's prized institutions. Joining me for lunch, one of Memphis's prized recruits, Derrick Rose, new point guard for the Memphis
2008.
Tigers.
Hey, Derek, how you doing? I'm doing fine, getting used to the weather.
Yeah, I know. It's hot out here. Did the staff tell you how humid it was going to be when you got down?
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to it coming from
amazing.
Chicago.
Amazing.
Man, if you ever want to watch a video of two people very uncomfortable on camera,
you still get adjusted, but
just Google Gary Parrish and Derrick Rose in Central Barbecue.
And we're really up against GP's got to go in like less than 90 seconds here. You can watch this video on the main CBS YouTube channel. The main CBS YouTube channel. Hold on, keep rolling, Josh, on this, because about a minute into this video, the flash cut, the edit on this, it goes from Derrick Rose smiling. Watch this. It goes from this, and then they cut to you in the back of your neck, and he's got a dead, cold stare ahead. Look at this. Watch how this changes in the next, like, 10, 15 seconds here. The edit is so harsh. It's crazy. Watch this. Here it comes. Here it comes. Watch this.
Also, by this time next week, there were a few people pointing.
So D Rose was, you know, he came back, he finished his career with the Grizzlies. And I brought him into this studio, and I said, man, I got to show you something. And we pulled it up, and I was like, he was like, I 100% remember this because it was his first day in Memphis, and he had on that Nike shirt. Mm-hmm. This is what he told me. He said, I had no idea Memphis was an Adidas school. And I was like, well, your brother knew. And so I showed up in a Nike shirt, and I realized I was like violating all sorts of stuff. That was his main memory from that day, not my hair. My hair was not his main memory from that day. It was that he was very publicly wearing a Nike shirt.
That's Mars Blackman, I'm pretty sure. That's Spike Lee Mars Blackman. That's incredible. Incredible stuff. Congrats on 2 decades strong. Let's keep it rolling here. I know we're uptight against it, but I had to. This was a mailbag episode disguised as a GP podcast nostalgia trip. So let's keep it rolling. And thanks so much for being a great teammate all these years, bud.
You're the best. That was sweet. I can't wait to see you in Las Vegas.
That's right. Just a few days from now. We'll podcast some way, somehow there. It will not be at Hakkasan at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, we are. We're podcasting from Hakkasan. We're going to Hakkasan and podcasting from there. I'm going to take all my equipment to Hakkasan. Let's call it a show. Shouts to Devin Downey, Chester, South Carolina, Terry Teagle. He's a legend. Hawk, Larnell, Hormuz. Oh, buddy. Did you see the Associated Press tweet?
Oh, you best believe I saw it.
3 tankers were struck in the Strait of Hormuz in the latest attacks targeting vessels moving through the narrow mouth of the Persian Gulf, the British military said. What a wild deal that is.
Hormuz out of the shouts.
Man, if you ain't subscribed to the Kyle College Basketball Podcast, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, Apple and Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments, so do that. We'll talk to you again from the desert. Till then, take care. Bye-bye.
Podcasts.